Welcome back to Bitcoover FM. This is the Fairy Thing retrospective interview
deep dive. The Fairy Thing feature.
The Fairy Thing feature. Much better. See, that's why you're in communication. that was Lost Lunar Levels. Definitely one of my favorite releases. I think it really shows your maturation as an artist, not only production style, but also just... It just sounds good. I like it.
Thank you.
There are a lot of tracks that I was like, okay, this is good.
I still cringe at it sometimes, but not as much as I do with a Year Moonbound, which means that I'm heading in the right direction.
There you go. There you go. Out of the Woods is the next release we're going to chat about here. And you can tell, I love the album art, by the way. Super, super cool. For those of you in Radio Land who can't see it, you need to go to fairything.bandcamp.com. And of course, download all the music, support the artist, but also the album art is kind of like in a snowy forest, and then we've got this again, the Fairy Thing purple, and some it's Fairy Thing purple. It just is, and then a leaf with a whole bunch of eyes. So, did you design the artwork for that?
I did.
Beautiful.
I made the leaf. I took the picture. That's a selfie, and then I meshed them together. I think in Photoshop back when I still used Adobe.
It kind of looks like a leaf with Sharpie.
Yes.
Sweet. All right, so my visual cues are, we're still there, folks, we're still there. I did a lot of typography, so I love digital design and that kind of stuff. We are just going to play a few selections from this because some of the tracks may disappear from the digital realm or...
Well, first of all, a lot of it isn't chiptune, and a lot of it isn't mine.
Nothing
this was
wrong
with an
that.
Anthology album, basically, or an anthology LP. I was always scared of calling it an album because I didn't want this to be like my debut album. And yeah, among other things, it was made during a pretty stressful time in my life. Like, this is pretty much a breakup album with a job that I held with an online theater collective that ended up being a pretty awful place to work at. And yeah, there's stuff there from some of my former coworkers. There's re-releases of stuff I made while I was on that team. And yeah, I don't know. It's just not something that I'm the proudest of. Like, there are attempts to like restore some of my older stuff that didn't go too great. A lot of the tracks I'm planning to re-release in some kind of better capacity soon because, yeah, it was either all, like, rushed or I couldn't restore it to the best of the ability I wanted to. And, yeah, some of it I cringe at. Some of it I'm still pretty proud of. Like, the instrumental tracks I think I did a pretty good job with, especially considering these were made on LMMS. I had to, like, retrieve the stems and, like, work on them in FL and, like, mix them and also rewrite and recompose them. There are old versions floating around because like the theater company was pretty big, so of course people ripped them and stuck them on YouTube, and I wouldn't even be that mad because like without that it would be like lost media, and I think it is lost media now because I remember getting miffed and being like, that's the only time I ever requested a takedown request on people uploading my work. And the only reason I did is because they got the titles wrong. They titled them all as like each other's names, and they didn't credit me. They just credited the theater company. They were like, this is just by this group. No mention of Fairy Thing, no mention of my name. And yeah. But yeah, I like the instrumental tracks. I'm proud of Desperate and Dazed and Out of the Woods.
That's my favorite.
And everything else either wasn't by me or I just don't like it anymore.
So I think we'll play three or four of these ones here. Create and Recreate, I really enjoyed. Mysteries and Such as well. Desperate and Dazed. And of course the title track, Out of the Woods. Anything special to talk about those tracks? I think those are all the instrumental ones, if I remember.
Well,
or kind of, sort of.
Yeah, Create and Recreate, and Mysteries and Such are both instrumentals. Those were made while I was still working for the place. And then I kind of like remade them, renamed them, remastered them. And I'll probably do that again sometime soon. I have plans because, yeah, Out of the Woods as a whole is probably going off streaming.
It's going to be Out of the Woods.
Yeah, it's going to be Out of the Woods. And then Desperate and Dazed and Out of the Woods are the two original singer-songwriter Fairy Thing things.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah, Fairy Thing has definitely become more bedroom pop over the next little while. I've become more comfortable with singing. I have plans of maybe someday just releasing instrumental stuff under my own name as I become like more of a soundtracky, sometimes gets commissioned kind of person. It just makes sense. So I can be like, instrumental is Alex and Fairy Thing is just like this weird little pop project where I sing about weird stuff. But yeah, Desperate and Dazed and Out of the Woods, those are about like leaving crummy situations and, you know, finding solidarity with other people who leave crummy situations.
Weirdos unite. Let's go.
Woo!
So we'll play those tracks for you. Create and Recreate, Mysteries and Such, Desperate and Dazed, and Out of the Woods from Out of the Woods by Fairy Thing. Enjoy.
after all.
Criminal investigation.
Was a few selections from Out of the Woods by Fairy Thing. And of course, if you want to check out this music, it's available on SoundCloud and Bandcamp. Just search for Fairy Thing, F-A-I, RYTHING.
Yeah, or wherever you get your music pretty much. I am on Spotify, but Spotify Premium would cost more than Spotify gives me, so.
We were chatting just in the break about some of the games and influential aesthetics of periods, and we definitely got on the topic of Pokemon, and I noticed that you have, well, oh, and now I notice that you not only put Mew on your phone, but you also got Moomin on the back.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I'm a big nerd when it comes to, like, cute. Are they, like, retro now? Like, it's been, like,
well, Moomin,
well,
I think
goes back to the 40s.
Yeah, exactly.
But, like, the anime that a lot of people, like, know it from now.
It's fairly retro.
Yeah, that's, like, 90s, I think.
Yeah, if not earlier. I think it's more
there
like
was also
70s.
There was a 70s iteration, but there was also a 90s iteration. I really like Moomins.
Yep, you're right. 90. See, I knew about the older one through one of my friends who's from Denmark, and he got me
the
into
one
like
Snufkin has
exactly,
like a gun or something.
Exactly. And then, speaking of Snufkin,
Snufkin for Halloween.
Nice, very nice. There's also a chiptune artist in Seattle who rebranded to Hurry Up Snufkin.
I love that.
So
that's
shout out,
so good.
Shout out to the Seattle chip scene. So yeah, cute stuff has influenced me for sure because my dad did a lot of traveling to Asia and Japan and Korea and China, and so he would bring my sister back kawaii and cute stuff, and I was like, I want some kawaii and cute stuff. So then he started bringing me back that. So I think kawaii is accessible to all. I think cute things are gender neutral. They're for everyone. That's my personal opinion.
I think we need more cute stuff. Yeah. Like, that is, like, I'm a hobbyist toy collector, so obviously I'm gonna, like, lean towards that. But I just find that, like, having, like, appealing things, like, especially cute things, it's just kind of like a soothing kind of vibe. It's a nice presence. Like, I don't know. I found that, like, putting cute things in my room makes it a nicer place to be in. Putting colorful things in my room makes it a nicer thing to be in. Like, I have been, like, pro just, like, coloring your life a bit more for years. In 2020, my New Year's resolution was to wear more color. And honestly,
it's beautiful.
It's made me a lot more comfortable in my skin. And I feel like it's really helped me with, like, confidence and stuff. Y'all can't see it because we are in, as Connor so aptly put it, Radioland. But I'm currently in, like, this little, like, night, like, I don't know what you would call this.
I would call it like a, it's almost kind of like a button up shoulder dress, and you've got a bit of like a cream, maybe tunic underneath or shirt ish kind of thing. Long shirt, but it's got some lace details around the shoulders, which pair nicely with the lace flower details on the dress. Underneath, there's also a green vibe, so you have the green and purple, which are always go together.
I love that color. Yeah. I love that color matching scheme.
Boots for the winter.
Yes, these are my Sperry's, which I was given by my aunt, who was like, if you want spare money, you can sell these. And I was like, I'm not selling these. It's winter. I need snow boots. And yeah, they're very reliable.
Oh, I should show you a picture when we're done here, but I have had my eye on these boots for a long time. They're made in Norway, and they're, sorry, vegans and animal for activists, but they're sealskin boots made in northern Norway. So yeah, very, very cool. So, but that's kind of the thing is, like, I think that, and this is my whole thing. For years, I tried to find boots that were fuzzy, and it's really hard to find guys' boots that are fuzzy.
Yeah.
And guys' fashion is
freaking boring. To the cute and colorful.
And colorful is for everyone. It's for everyone.
Yeah, I'm in a lot of, like, classes right now for my major about, like, communication technology and gender, and so much of it is about how, like, hegemonic masculinity basically works by just, like, punishing anyone who is feminine, whether it's, like, men being feminine or, like, women being feminine. Or being feminine in the wrong way. I don't know. I've had like 100 pages of readings every week. So that's kind of just like the gist of it. But if you want to like look into that kind of stuff, like hegemonic masculinity, pariah femininity was a really interesting concept I liked. Like this whole idea that there are forms of femininity that don't fall under the hegemonic one that is used to like kind of like keep the heteropatriarchal unit uplifted. I don't know. I'm just prattling right now about like communication. I also just got out of another communication class where we talked about cyborg feminism and cyber feminism.
That's cool.
Communication is such a fun major.
That's super cool.
Nobody knows what it means. So I just get to be like, well, I went to cyborg class today. So
how often are you going to say that? That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Also, the little wings in the ears, or in the hair, excuse me, is kind of like hair clips in there. And also, my personal favorite, in addition to all the cool stuff that's on your backpack and your Q-cord case and everything, I love the copper antlers on your headphones.
Thank you. These were 3D printed. I got them for myself as a little Christmas gift. I wear headphones pretty much daily. They're kind of a sensory aid for me because I get overwhelmed like by loud noises very, very easily. So yeah, I have these nice noise canceling headphones that I have covered in stickers and now have little 3D printed antlers on top of.
Beautiful, beautiful. And these things all tie into, you know, someone's identity as an artist. Mm-hmm. And especially I find that the more that you can be yourself physically and visually, the more you can be yourself creatively and musically as well.
Yeah, like there definitely is a difference between like Fairy Thing and Alex K. Massey, mm-hmm. but I feel like not that much of a difference. It's kind of like almost like a palette swap of me,
yeah.
for lack of a better phrasing. Yeah. Like Fairy Thing is like a bit more like, woo! Fairy Thing is like perpetually comfortable being on stage, while Alex might just some days want to like stay in bed and read a book.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there are, like, things that, like, I do that Fairy Thing doesn't, and things Fairy Thing does that I don't. But, like, I don't know. I've never really seen Fairy Thing as, like, a separate entity.
No, it's just a, that's such a good way to put it. And good games do good palette swaps well, so it's not, it's more of an extension of yourself than
yeah.
anything.
Would the Smash term be Echo Fighter?
It might be. Either the, well, because they're, weren't they?
Because they're, not, like, similar, they're, but not the same.
Yeah, I think... I know what you're talking. You're talking about like Pit and Dark Pit, and
yeah,
like
Peach
Samus.
And
yeah, Samus and Zero Suit Samus, and Young Link and Toon Link kind of mm-hmm. thing. Yeah, totally agree. Everyone, you should play Smash Bros. And you should also play other fighting games. I love fighting games. They're yeah. some of my favorite.
I had a Smash Bros. Ultimate phase. Nice. I actually one of my favorite memories from. I had the privilege of going to Japan last summer,
Woo!
And I ended up in a gay bar in Osaka with a Nintendo Switch setup. And I went in and I played Super Smash Bros. And I mained Isabelle. And I just beat all these random guys at Smash Bros. And before that, we were playing Mario Kart, where I also played Isabelle.
Oh.
And I beat all those guys at Mario Kart. And I had my bag with me. Not this bag, but another bag that had a little Isabelle keychain. So I was just like, yeah, Isabelle rip.
Let's go. Isabelle's one of my favorites in Smash because not only has she remained powerful throughout all the patches, mm-hmm. but it's, come on, it's Animal Crossing. And Villager also kind of up there as well,
yeah.
too. But there's nothing like Isabelle just thrown out.
That little fishing rod.
My friend does that to me all the time because he plays Isabelle a lot. I used to play Ness a lot.
Ah.
I was a big fan of Ness going back in the day. Link in the OG one, in the 64 one, and then I would say in Melee. Ooh, that's tough. That's very tough.
I only ever played Ultimate,
Samus.
So you're ahead of me.
That's because I'm old and decrepit. But
yeah.
I do remember, you know, how influential a lot of video games were. And that's kind of the reason why I started the program, was to showcase that there's so much good music out there that's made for video games.
Mm-hmm.
It is an expression of music in their modern sense, not only from a technological standpoint from chiptune, but also like just video game soundtracks in general. That's a huge portion of what we play on this program.
Yeah, and like video game music is one of my biggest inspirations, undoubtedly. Like I wasn't even that much of like a gamer when I was younger. Like my two video game interests, and this is pretty much consistent to this day with a few exceptions, were rhythm games and Nintendo.
Yeah.
And Nintendo was pretty squarely usually in like Animal Crossing and Pokemon.
Yeah.
I just liked these like nice little atmospheric background loops that would just like kind of enhance the experience, which is what music generally does. But like I loved just like walking around and stuff. And I remember being in like even like old kids MMOs. I would just walk around listening to the music.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, rhythm games too. Before I ever even saw like a DDR machine in real life, I would listen to like rhythm game music like on YouTube because there are all these people that would like upload them. So like stuff from like DDR, Beatmania, and Poppin' Music. And when I first like saw some of these machines in real life, I was so excited because it was like, oh my god, the music I've been listening to. Was I good at these rhythm games? Not really. I'm very uncoordinated. But it's fine because I was just so happy. Even if I failed every level, it's like, wow, I'm playing the stuff that I listened to when I was super young.
Two of my favorite rhythm games were Rhythm Heaven for the DS. So good. Great for coordination. And then Jubeat. I don't know if you've ever played it.
It scares me.
Yeah, it's cool, though. It's kind of like DDR for your hands.
Yeah.
For folks who are in the Metro Bitcoover area, you should go to Metro Town. And there's the old... There used to be a massive arcade called Playdium, but now there's just a kind of a smaller arcade. I forget what the name of it is, but it's by the manga
something.
Store.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's like really in the back.
Yeah.
There's also eSpot in Richmond, which I love.
There's Movie Land on Granville, and then mm-hmm. there's also the Rec Room. Yeah. But my favorite one is probably Capital City Arcade in New West because it's retro. And yeah. it's also no quarters. It's just you pay once and then everything's free to play.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Big shout outs, Capital City Arcade. We love you. What was your first Pokemon game that you played?
Well, I did get given an old Game Boy when I was 5 with Pokemon Red on it, but I was 5 years old, so I didn't know how to save. So I would just like get as far as like I would beat Brock, and then I would turn the game off, and then I'd turn it back on, and I'd be like, "No, it's gone." Cuz I was 5 years old and I didn't understand how video games worked. I thought that save the game. I'm autistic, so I take things literally, but back then it was even worse. So I thought, save the game. I did it. I beat Giovanni. I just hit this little button.